Happy hump day, everybody. This is Steve Ingblom. I'm senior editor of Blog Red Machine. Welcome back after a slight bit of a hiatus. Excuse me. Now you know one of the reasons why. Got a lot of things that I want to get into today. First things first, we're going to kind of change things up a little bit from how I've done it in the past. I've usually just had a couple handful of topics. And if you read the description of this, I've got so many things that I want to cover that I've actually got nine things, therefore nine innings. And going forward, that's what we will be doing. Excuse me again, from here on out. First things first, battle for the Ohio Cup started last night. Johnny Cueto looked absolutely fantastic. After that first inning where he threw 21 pitches, in his final eight, he only threw 101 others. And 81 of his 122 pitches were strikes. 81, that's almost two-thirds of his pitches. He had seven strikeouts, didn't walk a guy at all. He contributed with a hit. He even scored a run. And what helped him was the top of the order. Now, one of the knocks that the Reds lineup has gotten as of late was that the guys in front of Joey Votto haven't been doing anything. With the flu-like symptoms that are spreading throughout the Reds roster right now, Zach Cozart was scratched, Wilson Valdez was placed at short, Drew Stubbs also has the flu on top of having his oblique issue. So Chris Heisey was inserted in the leadoff, and Wilson Valdez was slated at number two. And then with Votto and Brandon, they went 9 for 18 last night. They scored four runs, had four RBIs. Three of those RBIs, by the way, were by Mr. Votto-matic. The only player that didn't even have a hit last night was Jay Bruce. So obviously there's going to be some people that are going to be concerned about that. But let's get back to Johnny Cueto here for a minute. How good has he been since the beginning of last season? I mean, he began last season on the DL. He ended up on the DL at the end of last season. But he's just been lights out pretty much since the beginning of 2011. His record is 16-8, and I know we can't put a whole lot of stock into that, or a lot of people don't put a lot of stock into wins and losses. But the fact of the matter is, whenever Johnny Cueto starts, the Reds do win. 16-8, a 2.36 ERA. And here's a stat that I do put some stock in, combined with the other ones beside it. A whip of 1.116 since the beginning of 2011. That is Johnny Cueto's whip, which means he's allowing just a little over a base runner an inning, be it via walk or via a hit. And he is getting hit a little more this year. Opponents are hitting about 249 off of him this year compared to about 219 for last year. But he's not walking as many people at that rate this year compared to last year. He's not striking out as many people, but almost 65% of his pitches are strikes. And here's the other thing, a set that I really like that I don't think gets enough play, and it's the strand rate or the left on base percentage. 81.2% of guys that reach base off of Johnny Cueto, they're stranded. That means not even 19%. 19% of the time, if you get on base against Johnny Cueto, you're going to score. That's it. That's winning baseball. And that's why Johnny Cueto has been so good since the beginning of last year. And that, you know, that's an ace-like number for that stat. It truly is. Just a note about tonight's game. If you didn't get to watch the telecast last night, Matt Latos will be going tonight. He'll be on his normal rest with the extra off days thrown in here and there. Mike Leake is getting pushed back from tonight until tomorrow afternoon. Hopefully he can go tomorrow afternoon because he is another one that's got those flu-like symptoms. So the matchup pitching-wise tonight now is Derek Lowe for the Indians and Matt Latos for the Reds. And by the way, Ryan Ludwig owns Derek Lowe. Something that I'm sure has created a little bit of a stir as of late has been the bullpen, is that it's not as been consistent as it had been. Well, when you look at the bullpen, as of late, you got to look at Aroldis Chapman. And his last two outings have not been memorable ones. We saw what happened Sunday night, and then we saw what happened at the end of the last game of the Pirates series, is Chetlin coughed up the game. There's no other way to put it. Now, he had some help in the Tiger game. You know, he had some help. It's called not having any arms left in the bullpen. Ain't that right, number 12? But his last two outings, he's thrown 54 pitches. He's surrendered 3 runs, all of them earned, 4 hits. He's only faced 12 batters with only 3 strikeouts and a walk. That is not the Aroldis Chapman that we had seen up until these last two outings. You look at the batting average, balls in play, and it's a 571. And you're thinking, oh, well, these guys are getting lucky. And if you've seen some of these hits, yeah, a couple bleeders. But there's been some that have been hit, that they've just been as squarely hit as you could hope for at a pitch coming at you at about triple digits. And that's just it. Of these last 54 pitches that Aroldis Chapman has thrown, 51 have been fastballs. He's only thrown a couple sliders, and he's thrown a changeup. And less than a week ago, I had written a post on Blog Red Machine about Aroldis Chapman and how he has been dominating. But I also pointed out that about 85% of the pitches he throws have been fastball. It's hard to square up with the laser, or laser beam in this case, or a bullet, as it was referred to Sunday night by Earl Hershiser. But the point of the matter is, these guys know. They know what he's going to throw. He has to get a little bit more of a variation in with his pitch selection. We know he can throw a slider. We saw him throw some sliders last year that were just flat out goofy. He made the batter look like goofy because they were swinging so weird. We need to see the control that we saw with him previous to these last two starts, plus give us that slider that he could get batters to swing and miss at last year. That is a completely untouchable Aroldis Chapman. And he needs to get back to that point with his slider and have some confidence in it. And that's something that's not been mentioned by anyone. I don't know if anybody's ever asked him about it or anything to that effect. He just doesn't seem confident with it. He seems to just want to throw the smoke because of the role that he's in now. And about that role that he's in now, no, I'm not going to sit here and go round and round about the fact that he's closing instead of starting, or in the bullpen instead of starting. But what we've seen here is the question has been raised is, okay, some people are completely and utterly ecstatic that he's a closer. But what if those 3, 4, and 5 guys come up in the 8th inning versus being in the 9th? Me personally, if I'm the manager, I want my best arm from the bullpen out there at that time. And at that point, and at this point, I don't think even with these last two outings, anyone could argue with you that that's not Aroldis Chapman. He is the best arm in that bullpen. I would rather face a 2, 3, 4 or 3, 4, 5 hitters in the 8th inning versus a 5, 6, 7, 6, 7, 8 hitters in the 9th. I know I've got good enough arms in the bullpen to throw to these other spots in the order, but when they got their best hitters up, I want my best reliever into the game. To slot him solely as a closer, and I think we might have seen Dusty Baker making that move a little bit on Sunday night. Okay, I'm lying. No, that's not what we did. We just saw a complete and total fail there. But that's how Aroldis Chapman needs to be used. He doesn't need to be slotted for a particular role. He needs to be used against the team's best hitters. Then we'll find out exactly if the Aroldis Chapman we had seen previous to the last two outings is the real Aroldis Chapman, or the one that we've seen the last two outings, or if it's a mesh of the two. But we won't find out with him just constantly facing guys that, theoretically speaking, should not be hurting him at all. Speaking of lefty relievers, if you live in Dayton and you got to go to the Dragons game Saturday or Monday, You got to see, or particularly Monday, you got to see Bill Bray on a rehab assignment. He pitched an inning and two thirds on Monday night. Nothing. Nothing. Okay, it's low A ball, but it's beside the point. Three strikeouts, faced five hitters. So you, and they talked about it last night during the broadcast. Tom and Chris Welsh did. What's next for him? He's going to have a couple more assignments, as John Fay said today. He's going to be in Louisville tomorrow and Friday. Then we'll see what move will need to be made then. And from what I, purely speculating here actually, is that the odd man out at that point probably going to be J.J. Hoover, as much as I hate to say that, because I like the way Hoover has performed. Some of you may say, well, Alfredo Simon was the one that got the last role on the team. Have you seen the way that guy has pitched as of late? He's been as unhittable as the rest. His season didn't get off to a fantastic start, but he has been doing just as well as anybody else, if not better than a couple of the other guys down there in the pen over the last month. Again, I'm just speculating. It's, you know, a move is eventually going to need to be made, probably not until the beginning of next week. We see how Roy reacts to maybe working back-to-back days down there for the Bats. Speaking of Bats, have you had a chance to check out our homepage lately? Got a poll on there, and it revolves around the addition of a bat that the Reds need. Now, I'm not talking about calling somebody else up from Louisville, because realistically speaking, with all the injuries they got down there, there's nobody to call up. We've heard that time and time again. Now, the poll that we got on our homepage there at blogredmachine.com is, if the Reds were to trade for a bat, who would you prefer? Now, two of the names that I've heard lately, one is Kevin Youkilis, the other is Carlos Quentin. And then I got a third choice. Well, I don't want either of them. I would prefer to see a lefty bat. Or final choice, and you always got to have something like this. Well, you know what? I'm okay with what's currently on the roster. In a runaway right now, 50% of you that have voted have said you would like Carlos Quentin. Not surprising. Second place, surprising in the fact that it's only 19% say they would like Kevin Youkilis. Here's where it gets a little dicey. 16% of you say you would want either Youkilis or Quentin. You would prefer a lefty bat. So that leaves 15% saying that you're set with what the Reds have. That's a little disturbing to me. 15%, really? I don't know the exact number of those that have said that. I know of... to me, the Reds bench right now is thin. And that's probably a compliment. We've seen Miguel Cairo struggle. Up until last night, it seemed like Wilson Valdez has struggled, although he did have an excellent game. And I know Cairo played a key factor in the Reds. Both Cairo and Valdez played key points in the only game the Reds won in the Tigers series. But man, oh man, the only people that they got that can pinch hit now are guys that it's when they're not starting. The Vados, the Fraziers. We've seen it the last couple years with Chris Heisey. If you sit those guys, oh, great, I got a bat off the bench now. You can't go through a season that way, folks. You just can't. The bench needs to be improved. Now, there's many ways to go about it. Okay, personally, I voted we need a lefty bat. I wouldn't be heartbroken over Quentin. I would more so be heartbroken over Youkilis. And I know lefty bats are hard to find. Eric Hinsky's, Matt Stairs, guys like that, they don't grow on trees. They honestly don't. That are good lefty bats and good clubhouse guys. They just don't come around too often. And I know what some of you might be thinking. Well, we traded away a left-handed hitter during the offseason. Yeah, you were clamoring for the dude to start, and there was no position for him. And people will say, well, you bat like that, you find a position for him. Look at Yonder Alonso's numbers right now. Look at Todd Frazier's numbers right now. I know it's a lefty and a righty. Todd Frazier's got better numbers than Yonder Alonso in less at-bats and in less games. That's all I got. That's all I'll say about that. After that last game in the Reds-Tigers series, there was this video that surfaced on the internet through YouTube and showed potentially, and I said that so wrong, potentially Tigers closer Jose Valverde spitting in his glove while the ball was in it. That is a no-no. That is a no-no. A couple of things that I want to touch about this is, first of all, some of the national type sites, Hardball Talk, USA Today, try to pass this all off on Matt Latos' wife, Dallas, as being the one that was, lack of a better phrase, setting the internet on fire with this video, when it wasn't her at all. It was a Reds fan. And you want to know what? It wasn't until a correction, even the local NBC affiliate tried to initially peg it off on her. I found a website, not even located in Ohio, that did their homework and found out who the individual was, his Twitter handle, his name. Well, you couldn't miss it on Twitter handle because it, you know, it appeared on his Twitter account. The video has yet to be removed by Major League Baseball, which I find a little bit astounding. Because usually, if you even so much as say MLB on a video sometimes, they will request that you take it down. Now, they may have requested that an individual take this down, but it's beside the point. Last time I checked, it had about 675,000 views, this video did, of Jose Valverde. The only place that found out the information on the guy was MLive.com. And one of the reasons why I know about that is I personally was born in Michigan, and I do check MLive out every once in a great while. And on my personal Twitter account, actually, I believe I still follow him. So that's how I found out. We know the nickname of Jose Valverde is Papa Grande. There's only two things grande on him. I mean, seriously. One's his theatrics. Number two is belly. That's about it. So what was the purpose of releasing this video? Now, I've not contacted the individual that did such, and I'm not going to question his motives on it in any way, shape, or form. Bottom line comes to this. Buster Olney tweeted today that Major League Baseball has contacted the Tigers about Mr. Valverde in this video, I guess, that cropped up. Now, since I'm recording it, MLB may have had it removed. I honestly couldn't tell you. I didn't check before I started this. I figured it would have been removed by now, to be completely honest with you. But the Tigers have been contacted by Major League Baseball. I remember now, I'm going to show my age on this, and I don't care. There used to be that if you were on the mound itself, and if you remember the old days with the AstroTurf, it was the cutout, and we still see the we see the cutouts. If you were on the dirt, you could not go to your mouth in any way, shape, or form. It did not matter what was going on within a game. You could not go to your mouth with your hand. Now, some of that rule still applies today. You could never, ever, ever, ever put your mouth toward your glove. I remember some years back, current Seattle Mariners pitching coach Carl Willis would do that. And other teams would accuse him of doctoring the ball, spitball, things of that nature. We see it with Andy Pettitte. They put their mouth to their glove. Nothing really gets said about it. And I don't care if you're holding the ball in the other hand, in your pitching hand, if your mouth's to your glove, your mouth should not be to your glove. It really should. But maybe something will come about with this, And Mr. Valverde will realize that, eh, never mind, I just think he's a flat-out buffoon anyway. Saw something interesting today from Hardball Talk, Craig Calcaterra, Men's Journal, a publication for men, obviously, did a survey, and reportedly, A.J. Pierzynski was voted the most hated player in baseball. We've seen AJ rub a lot of people the wrong way, both on the field and around the wrestling ring. The fans in Philadelphia were voted the most obnoxious. The player in the worst shape was Todd Coffey. I will argue that. With the gentleman we just talked about before that, because Jose Valverde is in no better shape than Todd Coffey. At least Todd Coffey can run. Couple of things, and it's always a couple of things with me in case you haven't noticed, about this. The sample size, Men's Journal, come on now. You asked a whole 100 players about this? That's all you could ask about 100 players? It says right here, in Men's Journal survey of 100 Major League players. That's what Calcaterra has. And if that's the case, oh my goodness. That's asking 4 out of 30 teams. That is such a great sample size. That's not even 20% of the league. And you expect us to really put anything in this. However, I can bring some life here to the part about where the Philadelphia fans being the most obnoxious. Okay, last night, Philly's second baseman, maybe after this year, American League designated hitter, Chase Utley, was on a rehab game down in single-A Clearwater. He didn't have a real good night. Now, this is the first time this guy's been in live action in a game in good grief. Who could even think when? Some of you will love to hear that Chase Utley was 0 for 5 in the game. And that Mr. Utley struck out on 3 occasions. Now, these are Philadelphia Philly fans, probably. They're actually Clearwater. But he was booed after his last strikeout. And I'm not going to bring up the thing about Philly fans booing Santa Claus and then harping on that. That gets so far run into the ground. And he got booed. Now, people are making a big deal about this, that Utley got booed at a single-A game. Here's the thing. He got booed after his third strikeout. All right, third strikeout happened in the bottom of the ninth. There's a runner on first and one out. He was already 0 for 4 with 2 whiffs. And he ends up striking out a third time, forcing the game in the extra innings. You would figure he could at least hit one of those single-A pitchers. At least get a hit. One. And you could say, well, Steve, he hasn't swung a bat in so long. This is Chase Utley. Some people felt he was MVP some years back. But I guess not. Anyway, so Utley was booed. Tampa ended up scoring in the top of the 10th. They beat Clearwater 4-3. So I guess it may be a while before we see him get it. It's a rehab game. I'm not going to put it. A whole lot of stock into that. But I will put stock in the fact that they only talked to 100 ball players. Come on now. Really? What'd you do? What? You talked to the Mets, Yankees, Red Sox, and one of the teams from, Baltimore, or you know, so you wouldn't have to go so far? You know, or Philly? Wait, it couldn't have been Philly. Well, I don't know. It might have been Philly. Earlier this week, or around this weekend, you might be familiar with the name Jorge Soler. Or Soler, depending on how you want to pronounce it. I've heard it both ways. Another Cuban, signed by the Cubs, to a pretty big deal, 9 years, $30 million. And there are some caveats and clauses in that where he could potentially make more, but he'll make no less than 30 million. Here's the thing. This kid is the only player that one of the big boys has snatched up out of the last three. Now, the first one to run through, obviously, we remember the El Duque, or Orlando Hernandez and Jose Contreras. The Yankees and the Red Sox were both hot and heavy over those guys. Well, with Aroldis Chapman, we had just briefly heard that maybe they were involved. The only two teams that I can really recall being interested in Chapman were Toronto and Houston. And then we didn't hear it a whole lot with Yenis Cespedes either. We didn't hear a whole lot of teams wanting to be, clawing for his services. Well, Chapman signed a 6-year deal for a little over $30 million with the Reds. Cespedes signed a 4-year deal for about $36 million with the A's. So actually, if you think about it, the Cubs got off on the cheap, and how's that? This guy's not ready for, not considered big league ready like Chapman and Cespedes were. They're saying probably high A is where he'll start once he reports to the Cubs. That being said, the Yankees feel that the Reds overpaid for Chapman, the A's overpaid for Cespedes. Now, the Cespedes deal, I'll agree with that. And the Chapman deal, I'm not 100% in agreement with the big budget Yanks on that. But they were willing to throw all this money toward these Japanese players. And what have they got with them? Now, I'm not saying they've all been failures, but to not been it, same thing with the Red Sox and to the to a lesser extent the Mariners and other teams. I don't understand why Chapman, Cespedes, and Solar weren't more sought after as they were. I don't know, maybe there's something in regards to their work visas or their visas period that's not being let on here like we think. By the way, those contract terms, got those off of Cots Baseball Contracts, which is now part of Baseball Perspectives. Prospectus, baseball prospectus, that is, just to keep you in the loop on that part as well. Late last night, Ken Rosenthal had updated a post on FoxSports.com that there are now three bidders left for the San Diego Padres. The group that appears to probably be the front runner is a group led by former Dodgers owner Peter O'Malley. There's two other ones. I know at one time we had heard that golfer Phil Mickelson was wanting to be that. I don't know which group that he was in on, if there's still, or if he's in the same group with Mr. O'Malley, what have you. But we need to keep an eye on this, and here's the reason why. Number one is that the Reds and the Padres have kind of a close. There's a little similar as far as their makeup of the market, as far as what Nielsen refers to as TV homes. San Diego has a little less than 1.1 million. Cincinnati has about 925,000. Now, that's really not a whole lot. We're talking about, a few percentage points in difference. Earlier, well, before the season began, we had heard a rumor that the Padres were looking at a deal where they were going to get $150 million a year from a TV contract. Well, here's something else that here's something that I want to throw in on this, and this is through Rosenthal on FoxSports.com. The sale price for the Padres is expected to meet or exceed $800 million. I'm going to stop right there for a second. Only because, and this is, and actually, that's from a source that Ken Rosenthal has. Look at what the Dodgers sold for, and then you're looking at what the Padres are selling for. But here's the thing: of that $800 million, again, Rosenthal, $600 million for the club, $200 million for a portion of the team's equity stake in Fox Sports San Diego. The team will continue to own 20% of the regional sports network, and their annual TV revenues will increase from $15 million last season to an average of $50 million per year over the span of the contract. So what Rosenthal is saying here is the Padres aren't going to get what they were originally thinking they were going to get. I think I said $150 million. I think it was more along the lines of $75 million. Now that I think about it, I talked about it on podcasts. I've written about it in like three different posts since that all came out. But the fact of the matter is this. If the San Diego Padres, in a market that's only three ranks higher than the Cincinnati Reds, can get three times as much money a year, over three times more as much money a year, more, over 300% more from their TV contract, as I try to speak English again, can't the Cincinnati Reds? You know, granted, Bob Castellini probably does not own a stake in Fox Sports Ohio. But could he? Could he attempt to do so? Well, that possibility already exists that he could try to become an owner of that. I mean, look what the Indians owner did with Sports Time Ohio. Again, another subject I touched upon. They turned away a bid from Fox Sports Ohio. Decided to start their own regional sports network. And that's basically what Fox Sports Ohio is. It's a regional sports network. And that's what Fox Sports San Diego is. You're thinking to yourself, well, there's not, you know, what's in San Diego that could be out there? You know, they don't have a professional hockey team, Fox Sports. Ohio has the Blue Jackets. Oh, got the Columbus Crew now. The point of the matter is you've got other sports out there that can exist on a college level. You've got a pretty good couple good baseball programs out there in San Diego and San Diego State. They're pretty good. You've got extra stuff that you can cover from the Chargers. You got extra stuff. You know, you obviously got the Padres. So if they can get $50 million off of that a year, I think the Reds are in line for something right on that number, if not a little bit more, considering the commodities that the Reds have versus what the Padres have. And those commodities being Votto, Phillips, Chapman, just to name three of them. And they've got others on that roster, too. Good young players. Bruce. You know, we haven't seen the best of a Matt Latos yet. But we need to keep an eye on this just for the fact that some of these numbers that come up, and I'm not talking about how much the team sells for, but how much this ownership group is going to own in Fox Sports San Diego and what they're going to get out of it from a financial standpoint. I'm not saying, yeah, let's go raid them. No, not that at all. So we're through our first eight innings. Here we come to the ninth, and it's a special thing here that the ninth inning is. I'm going to give a huge hat tip on this to OMG Reds. I just saw it today, and I feel bad that I didn't see it sooner, or I would have actually said something, probably because I don't check my Twitter enough, and for all I know, Sam LaCure tweeted about it. If you go to the Reds auctions, reds.auction.mlb.com, there is on there one of the neatest things that I've seen. Sam LaCure has personally donated and autographed the pair of Under Armour cleats he wore on Mother's Day. So yes, they are pink. And I'm not going to lie to you. I'm looking at them right now as we speak, and they're pretty cool. They are really cool. If you want a chance to bid on them, yeah, got almost 4 days left. Got 3 days and a little over 20 hours left. 20 bids have been placed. Right now, the high bid, $152.99. $152.99 right now is the high bid. Money goes toward the Reds Community Fund. And, wow, I like looking at these pictures. You know, these actually almost look like some type of tennis shoe my granddaughter would wear. Yeah, but they are sweet looking. Need to go there. I'm going to put a link to this item in the post for this podcast. So if you're getting to it straight through Podomatic, go to bloggeredmachine.com. I will have a link to the auction in on that, and you can get on in on the bidding if you so wish. A couple things here before I sign off. Every day, come check out our homepage, check out our hub. Try to keep up on some links and some video, more with links. Sometimes video is hard to get. We could put a link there to the video, and a couple days later, MLB could take it back down, so we try to find them on YouTube. If you want to get a hold of us with any comments, questions, advice, anything to that nature, blogredmachine@gmail.com. We will respond to you. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, @blogredmachine, all one word, all lowercase. Give us a like over on Facebook. And we've been trying to get something in the works here for the past few months. We now have our own dedicated page on Google+. We've got some things that we're going to be able to do in the works with that. More on that will be to come. Again, we thank you for listening. We're thankful for the Vado Occupied Alliance ladies, Heather, Casey. We appreciate you helping keep Mr. Vado in Cincinnati. My name's Steve Bloom, senior editor for Blog Red Machine. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and go Reds.